Welcome to the Reading Room, the Diagnostic Imaging Podcast. I am Jeff Hall, the Senior Editor for Diagnostic Imaging. In our latest podcast episode, the last part of a three-part podcast on remote MRI safety, we'll be discussing keys to effective timeout procedures and communication with remote MRI scanning. I am pleased to be joined on this podcast episode by Dr. Emmanuel Knoll and Tobias Gilk. Dr. Knoll is Chief of the Division of Emergency Radiology and Director of Magnetic Resonance Services with the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Tobias Gilk is the founder of Gilk Radiology Consultants, a Senior Vice President of Radiology Planning, and a board member of the American Board of Magnetic Resonance Safety. Now, let's get to the questions for Dr. Emmanuel Knoll and Tobias Gilk. What strategies can maintain the integrity of timeout procedures and communication with remote MRI scanning?
A timeout procedure is more critical than ever before. A timeout is a, are you sure? A timeout is an opportunity to verify the decision we're about to implement, whether it's surgical, whether it's biopsies, whether it's interventional, whether it's purely diagnostic. A timeout is designed to stop, pause, verify a decision that's about to be implemented. So here, we added another human being into the process. So, if anything, a timeout procedure as part of standard operating procedure, it must be added if it doesn't already exist. As Toby was saying, if it's not already part of your ACR guidance, maybe we need to add it, even if it is part, in other locations as well. The concept of put that patient in the room. Oh, yeah? Who's responsible for that decision? Did you say put them in, or did I decide to put them in? And if something untoward occurs, well, I didn't say put them in. In writing, prospective divided liability. Timeout, if anything, is even more important than it was before because we added more players to the mix. And so knowing and verifying in writing that a decision was just made and we're about to implement, is everyone happy with what we're about to do, is more critical than it's ever been before. Then you added the second part, which was communication. And that's easy. I've designed some systems that will be releasing hopefully to the public shortly. But everything I've designed that has to do with MRI and safety is based on some of you may know I'm a pilot, and everything I've learned about safety, I can unabashedly say I've learned just about all of it from the aviation industry. If there's any industry that is so paranoid about safety, it's the aviation industry. And many of the practices that I recommend for usage in MR environments, I learned from my training and my present implementation as a pilot. I bring that up because a fascinating point of view of the Federal Aviation Administration is that you're never allowed to say, well, you have to plan because if an emergency happens, they would never accept such terminology. Never accept the terminology if an emergency happens. In the FAA, the terminology is when the emergency happens. It's a statistical inevitability, and you better plan for it, and you better have a way out to handle and manage the ultimately inevitable emergency, whether it's carbon monoxide in the cockpit, a fire, a failed engine, communications loss, whatever it is. You better plan for it because it's inevitable. And eventually, with enough people flying, enough hours, and enough different aircraft, it's going to happen. Plan for it. Anticipate and provide. The same exact thing applies here. One of the things we know about in remote MR scanning is we need communication. That communication will go down. Certainly, it would be facetious to say if it goes down. Heck, I'm surprised this communication between us didn't go down yet. Glitches happen all the time. What's your standard operating procedure, Manny? What do you do when communication goes down and you're in the middle of a scan? Do you stop the scan? Do you complete the scan? What does the boots on the ground do if they've lost communication? What was the last command given? What was the last thing happening? Am I supposed to continue to? That's a critical part of remote MR scanning and the standard operating procedure we discussed before. We brought it up in the beginning and we bring it up now again at the end. When communications go down, nobody cares. We anticipated that, and this is what we do, and this is how we manage it. Everything from what's your backup to that communication? Did you choose to have a backup to the backup? It's up to the site. And what if you lost all your backups? Now what do? You've thought about it. You understand, I will lose communication. This is my SOP, and this is exactly what I told them before I put them in this position. They already know their job. They've been trained for it. When communications, all of it goes out, video only, communication, audio only, audio and video, what's your response? It's all been prospectively laid out. That's in the SOP. And it's not there today, and it may not be necessary today. But when you discuss remote MR scanning, you wouldn't even think of starting without having that all prospectively laid out in writing and clarified before you start accepting your first remote patient.
I'll add something and say something that I think will probably rub some people the wrong way. With respect to timeout types of procedures, which I agree with Manny, they're important in any MR environment, and they're absolutely vital in a remote operated environment. There is a presumption by people who haven't done timeout processes, surgical timeouts and that sort of thing, that this is some sort of feel good kumbaya group hug moment. And that's not what it is at all. It is specific to the workflow and identifying that the elements necessary for the workflow to be done safely have been completed to that point. And here's the thing that I'm going to say that I think will probably rub some people the wrong way. We make sort of bumper sticker slogans of MRI safety is everybody's responsibility. No, it's not. The notion that this is some kind of collective group project that we're all working on, is one of the greatest disservices that we can do to MRI safety. Dr. Canal's analogy to, flight checklists, right? What we need to be doing, yes, everybody does have a responsibility towards MRI safety, but MRI safety writ large is not everybody's responsibility. We need to identify for individuals, for specific roles. And this is one of the things that I actually hope comes out of remote scanning, where we for the first time in MRI, really have to think down to the nuts and bolts of what is this individual role's duties, responsibilities, expectations, limits of their authority. MRI technologists have sort of evolved organically over the last 40 plus years in terms of their roles, and nobody's really had to think about it. And so there are all of these kind of vague and nebulous platitudes about MRI safety being, a collective responsibility, when what we need to make these environments safe is we need to have to expand and probably torture Manny's metaphor. We need to designate the pilot and the co-pilot, right? We need to designate these are my responsibilities and those are your responsibilities. And collectively, we will make sure that each one of us has met our responsibilities. And in the case of a timeout procedure, we are going to do that collectively, verify our individual checklists and cross-reference against one another, make sure that we understand who this patient is, what is in them, what equipment or devices are we bringing with them into the room, what study are we performing, how, what are the particulars of the questions or concerns that we have about this patient. It is in the act of defining individual role duties, responsibilities, expectations, and crystallizing that that we begin to build workflows that don't have gaps, that don't have the presumption of, well, I thought you were going to take care of it. That to some of the earlier conversations, you know, well, I didn't say to do that. You know, who told you to do that thing that you did that turned out badly? When we crystallize and get it down to checklists and individual scopes of responsibilities, and we error check those to make sure that we don't have unnecessary overlaps or gaps between them, it is then that we build operational structures and practices that are going to be significantly more effective at reducing risks in the point of care environment, in a remote scanning environment, within MRI. I think we have accepted sort of the organic growth and organic, I'm hesitant to use the term maturation of MRI as a clinical process. And I think the one thing, one of many things that a full remote operation model gives us the opportunity to do, it's to reflect and say, how do we want to do this? Who do we want to do this? What are our minimum expectations of the individual who is going to do this? MRI is not everybody's responsibility. It needs to be parsed. And we need to clearly articulate, this is your responsibility. These are your expectations. And these are the next guys, and these are the next guys, and these are the next guys. And collectively, we're going to cover the whole landscape. But each individual has particular responsibilities and duties to the institution, to the patient. And I think that's one of the things that I'm extraordinarily hopeful for will be an outgrowth of remote. And I hope that that actually kind of backfeeds into point of care MR technologist delivered MR care.
Dr. Knoll, did you want to add anything to that?
Sure. I referenced before the article I had written, Divided Liability Remote MR Scanning. The purpose of the article was exactly the concept we're discussing now. Most people don't recognize that when you get on a commercial flight and you're going to go across the state or across the country or across the globe, it's entirely possible that that pilot and that co-pilot, the pilot in command and the second in command, is the actual terminology that the PIC and the SIC, they may never have met each other until that flight. What are you talking about? They have to be working together every day for 20 years to be a fine-tuned. They may not have met each other, but they have such unbelievably clearly defined roles and tasks in every single stage of flight. So much so that when I fly and I'm alone in the aircraft, I enumerate certain values out loud as if my SIC is with me. Because you can't behave differently in this environment than that environment, because you'll make a mistake. You'll leave out. You do it exactly the same every time. And I call out the altitudes as I'm getting to certain critical stages. I don't think you yet understand how specific I'm being. Not only is it so well modeled, each one is so compartmentalized, they're modular. I can take this one out and put a different SIC in. Oh, you're hitting your overtime hours. There's no overtime in aviation. None. Not by 1 second. You maxed your duty cycle. It's no longer legal for you to fly. I'll replace you with someone else. I'll plug them in. And now, last minute, there's a change as to who the pilot in command is going to be. And the final kicker, in aviation, on the leg back, if they're flying the same leg back together, the PIC and the SIC can swap. The captain doesn't have to be the PIC. He can be the second in command for that leg. The co-pilot, they now may be the pilot in command for that flight. Do you understand? because the duties and the responsibilities are so unbelievably clear as to who does what when. And both are counting on everyone to know their job and to execute it properly. And that's what makes it so not only safe, but a topic we're not going to be hitting today, but is critical for the survival of remote MR scanning, let alone its growth, efficient. So conceptually, previews of coming attractions, you can expect to hear in our coming up presentations, you can expect to hear more about defining positions, defining roles, defining responsibilities, and generating the standardization as to what they are. We did this before. We did this before when we created the Magnetic Resonance Medical Director, Magnetic Resonance Safety Officer, Magnetic Resonance Safety Expert. Who is responsible for what? And how do they relate to each other? And whose job is it to do what? Here, it's the same thing on steroids. Here, it's even more critical that it's exquisitely well defined and it's legally defined. And that standardization we hope to introduce shortly into the entire international arena. And that standardization will give us the benefit of objectively better safety, more people allocated towards watching safety and not doing every task at the same time. You worry about that the patient moved and you have to repeat the sequence. I'll worry about that they're pulling up, pressing this the panic bolt. More people focusing on safety. At the same time, the ability to now make it so modular that we can increase efficiency, who is doing it, how are they doing it, and from where they're doing it becoming less and less important. As long as they all know their jobs, I should be able to plug anyone in and continue. Previews of coming attractions.
I'd like to thank Dr. Emmanuel Knoll and Tobias Gilk for sharing their insights on this topic. I would also like to thank the listeners for joining us in the Reading Room, the Diagnostic Imaging Podcast. As always, visit diagnosticimaging.com for the latest news and perspectives in radiology.